Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's May 7th, 2013. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal in New York. Thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. All right, we had a very special weekend. Nepenthea, that crazy beer event by Be United up in Connecticut. John Lundbaum's here, and you brought three different brewers from three different countries.
Yeah, you bet, Jimmy. And we had a really fantastic event on Sunday. We had, I think, like 12 or 13 brewmasters present, which was really exciting. We had about 400 people, accounts coming out, wholesalers, consumers. It was really a lot of fun coming up to our place in Oxford. And here in the studio today, we have four of our very bestest friends from around the world.
Let's go around the room because they all have interesting names. And other than Paolo over here, I can't pronounce it. But say your name and what brewery you're from.
Hi, everybody. I'm Paolo Fontana from Baladen Brewery in Italy.
All right. And this guy.
Hi, I'm Michael from Densmuld in Denmark.
Densmuld, the mead company, right?
That's correct.
And this guy?
Hi, I'm Rob Lovett from Thornbridge Brewery in Bakewell in Derbyshire.
All right, let's raise our glasses. You guys are some of my favorite brewers, and cheers. Right now we're drinking your Thornbridge, is it the Jaipur or the Kipling, Rob?
Yeah, we're drinking the Kipling at the moment, which is it's one of our brands that's been really, really successful. It's we call it a South Pacific Pale Ale. It's a single, it's hopped just with Nelson Sauvon, which is a New Zealand hop. This hop is really distinctive. You guys in the US are probably, the English and the German hops, they're kind of boring, and the US hops are really exciting. But new on the scene is the hops from Australia and New Zealand. And so we went over there, and we love the Nelson Sauvon hop, and it's just been an absolute success, particularly in the US, because I think you guys aren't used to that hop profile.
No, I don't think we are, but we're seeing more of them. And
yeah,
these guys are crazy. I got Rob, Michael, and Paolo. Paolo, talk to us. I can't understand you, but I love your accent.
That's good. What do you want to?
I want to hear about the beers that you make.
Okay, is the Baladen Brewery starts in 1996, and we brew just ales. Different kind of ales. I mean, we made not hoppy beer. That's our specialty. Now the world goes with very hoppy beers, but all of that the Baladen Brews makes is making beers that are not very hoppy. This is because one of our first goals is pairing always food and beer. And bitterness is a little bit difficult to make pairings with food. So what we think is making always no very bitter beers, very warmy, very involving, and different kind of, interpretation.
When you first started, you were trying to make beers for restaurants, right? In Italy?
Yeah. I didn't start the brewery. It was the owner. I am just the brewer, but one of the goals of the brewer has always been making beer for going in restaurants, because in Italy we don't have a real beer culture. So and we have wine culture. So everybody when takes better a glass of wine than a glass of beer when he's going at the restaurant or going having an aperitif. And so this is why we make beers in this way. They are dressed like wine bottles and so on.
And what's this one? It's the Baladin Super. What is that?
Baladin Super is Baladin Super. It's Super Baladin. No, I mean, it's a kind of Abbey Ale, 8 ABV, Amber Ale, very sweet, very smooth, fruity. One of our most successful brands. Is the beer that make the Baladin famous in Italy, I mean. Because till now, there's customers that comes to the bar, to our historical restaurant, and it's now the Baladin starts in 1996 for the production, it's 17 years, and they just drink Super Baladin.
That's great.
Maybe they addicted. That's good for us.
And John, you guys really at Bean United, you've put together this really interesting collection of brewers from different countries. That what's the connection? You know, you're looking for certain small breweries or some esoteric thing or what?
Well, you know, at Bee United, we do end up working with a lot of very, very small, very artisanal, you know, producers. I mean, in the case of Michael and Don Skmiot, it's really a one-man operation. I'd say that more than anything else, we're looking for the quality of the liquid. I mean, we are approached on a daily basis by many, many, many breweries that would love for us to represent them in the U.S., but it's just not fair to our existing breweries. And unfortunately, the bar for bringing a product into the American market and it competing well is getting very, very high. And we're proud of the quality of the liquid that we get to represent in the States and are very honored to work with the brewmasters that we can.
And so it's also, Michael, why don't you say hello again? You're Dansk Mood.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
You know, I for some reason I thought your label was about like blood, like dark, dense blood. And I didn't even know it was mead until today.
Yeah, well, for most people, mead is seen as some sort of ancient beer, actually. But the thing is that it's only made out of honey as the only product that contains sugar. So it has absolutely nothing to do with beer. But still, people compare it with beer, and it works well with beer if you mix it. If you do around 20%. Mead and 80% beer, you actually end up getting something that we have been doing in Denmark for over 1,000 years. So it's more or less the first cocktail
world. What do you call that drink?
Yeah, well, it has different names, but one of the names in Danish is called Mjøl.
Always called
Paolo. I want Paolo to say that.
Call me
Mjøl.
Mjøl.
See?
Yeah, or it has another name called Mielske.
Mielske?
Yeah, that right. Worked quite well. So.
Easy for a northwestern Italian that speaks Piemontese, that is a patois similar to French. So.
All right, yeah.
But what we are most concerned about in the brewery, and as John was saying, that we have been existing for almost 60 years, and it's still a one-man operation. Because we...
You're the one man.
I am.
So who did it before you?
Yeah, well, there was a guy doing it for around 20 years, and we built up an apprenticeship, or whatever you call it. And I was being educated by him for around 2 years. And the thing is that you have a lot of technology for making beer, and you can make very good beer, but when it comes to meat, there's absolutely nothing. So we are developing the techniques and technology for it ourselves, and that's what makes the difference between some of the meats we are making and some of the meats you find elsewhere.
Now, Michael, maybe you can speak a bit about the strength of your meats. I mean, we have meats from all over the world at varying strengths, but yours are very, very strong, very sweet, but also you use hops to offset the bitterness.
Yeah, that's correct, and one of the main reasons for the added alcohol level is actually that when we are working with honey, a lot of the flavor is attached to the sugar in the honey. So if we want to ferment all of the honey and all the sugar in the honey, we end up getting something that's quite uninteresting. So in order to preserve that flavor, we need to stop it at a certain stage and add alcohol. And it's not a unknown technique, because if you talk sherry in Spain or port wine in Portugal, it's the same technique, although it was meant for being something to preserve, to preserve the product, and that was why you were adding it.
So this is one of the meads. Did everyone get to try it?
Yeah, this is the Dansk Viking Blood.
All right.
Yeah, and the Viking blood is the primary ingredients in terms of spices is actually hibiscus, where it actually gets its name from because it's slightly red. But at the same time, we would like to think of a name where you could actually, that it could be used in several languages without having to...
Viking's blood.
Yeah, because as you heard earlier, perhaps Paolo is very good at pronouncing some of the names, but in general, we have some letters that are very hard to pronounce, so making it that bit easier.
So, Rob, you're here in New York hanging out with the Be United guys. Uh-huh. Do you guys learn from each other? You know, you've got a Danish mead maker, an Italian brewer, crazy Americans.
Yeah, you always learn from other brewers. I mean, that's one thing I've always... It's an industry where... I mean, other industries, I think people kind of are a bit more secretive, but brewers are generally really, really open people. And, I mean, I've written to people... This is my fifth time in America, mostly West Coast, first time to the East Coast. But I've written to brewers before and asked them about a beer that I really enjoyed, and they told me exactly how they did it, and which is just, it's unheard of, you know. So, yeah, it's great meeting with these guys and asking them and learning the techniques that they've used to make such great beers, yeah.
I have a basic question for you, like, because I don't make beer and I don't export, but you're making beer in England, uh-huh. and you've got these importers like Be United, and uh-huh. they're coming to a place like New York. I mean, how are you involved in that process? You know, you're just making the beer. Are you putting it in cask? Are you putting it in kegs? You know, what's your relationship to the end product? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. But we chose Be United because what they're doing is brilliant. They're not just in it, that, you know, they really care about the beer and they're passionate about the beer just as we are. What I really like about Be United and Matthias is they take our beer in a tanker. It's chilled all the way over and then it's processed and kegged, and so it's as fresh as it can be, because that's what always worries me about our beer. I want the consumer to taste our beer as it was intended to be, you know, really fresh, which is, you know, beer should be drunk fresh. Well, not all beer, but, you know, hop-driven beers should be drunk fresh, and Be United do a really good job of bringing it over in the tanker and then packaging it. And I've tasted it here, because I was a little bit reserved about it. I was thinking, how's it going to taste? Is it going to be as fresh as it should be? And, it has been. I've been really pleased with it.
And, John, how many breweries are you guys shipping over in tankers? And you're kegging in Connecticut, right?
Yeah, our facility is in Oxford, Connecticut. I always get this number wrong. I think at this point we have 7 bulk tank containers. Each one has 4 compartments of 3,500 liters. Each compartment in each tanker is separately regulated as to temperature and pressure. So we have one tank container that just goes back and forth to Japan for filling up with kegs at the Hitachino Brewery. We have a tanker that pretty much goes back and forth to the UK for Thornbridge and for breweries like Harveston and some smaller breweries there that we're starting to work with. We send one back and forth to Germany, one back and forth to Belgium, and one back and forth to Italy for Balladin, et cetera. We're actually very, very excited. At some point this year, I hope we're getting a 3,500-liter compartment of Viking blood.
That's correct.
Awesome.
Within the next 30 days.
Oh, my God. That's so exciting. So. Yeah, I keep hearing about that plan, though. But, yeah, we're going to be doing 20-liter pins and maybe some very slightly carbonated kegs of Viking blood, which is really exciting. We're bringing in beer from 12 or 13 different countries, and we're trying to get as many of the breweries that we work with involved in this project as we can.
All right. I want to talk about Paolo from Balladin. So, Paolo, you come to New York sometimes.
Yeah.
Tell us what you like about New York and what places do you go to?
What I like about New York, I don't know. I come from... let me talk about where I come from before talking about New York. I come from the village where there's the brewery is 800 people. Included cats and chickens. So when you come to New York, there's something different. Everything is different. Everything is so tall. Everything is so big. The street, the That is so much people. So what can I say? New York is it's also in the something that each Italian or each people in the world is like a mythological city. It's the Big Apple, is famous all around the world. So what can I say about New York? New York is exploding. New York is a kind of mecca for beer, for craft brewing. You can go in a lot of bars and you can find a lot of different craft brewers, different kind of beers. So it's, what can I say, for a brewer, it's a paradise. And when I go, when I come to New York City, well, whatever. Of course, I go back up to the roof garden of, can I say Italy, New York?
Sure, man.
Okay. We have a little brewery upstairs there in collaboration with Dogfish Head and Piero del Borgo. Then we brew some seasonals and so on. And then go around, Ginger Man, and good bars in Brooklyn as well. I can't remember all the names. Sorry about that. But so it's fantastic going in New York.
All right. But wait, hold on a second. We are just shaping the scene here tonight. We've got some interesting people here from Italy, Denmark, England, and America. And we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
In the garden, an old pair of jeans, and she smiled at the sun.
You're listening to Persephone by The Hollows on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
She wiped the dirt from her hands as she stood up to leave. And the earth opened up and she was taken from me.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. What a show we have. It's been a big weekend in New York. We had the Food Book Fair. I was hanging out at the Hotel Wyeth all weekend. We've got the guys from Be United here. We've got Simon from Thornbridge Hall and Rob. We've got Paolo from Baladin and Michael from Dansk Mood, the mead guy. And we have some other guests, too, calling in a few minutes. But right now we're drinking some other Be United beers. Our new buddies, Michael Brooks and Brian Leonard, just walked in from Bedvine. They're opening Bedvine Brew very soon. So hello, Michael, and hello, Brian. We're going to talk to you a little more later in the show, but I wanted to say hi to you guys.
Hey, how's
hello,
it going?
Jimmy. How you
all
doing?
Right.
Thanks for having us on.
Okay, and you guys brought in some Be United beers, too. What did you bring, Brian?
I brought over Professor Fritz Breem 1809, beautiful example of a Berliner Weiss with a little bit more ABV as a typical Berliner Weiss. I think it's beautiful with the champagne-like bubbles. It's a great sipper for this temperature in the season. The other beer that I brought over is brewed by Mr. Hans-Peter Drexler over there at the Schneiderweiss Brewery. We got the Edelweiss, the organic Edelweiss. I consider that a transition from the Aventinus into the springtime. Still got more of a malt profile to it, a little bit more ABV, but man, is it smooth. It's got a beautiful clove note, a little bit of cracked pepper. I think it's lovely. It's a great
Brian,
decision.
Brian, you ran a tasting room for a while, right? At Radagast, were you the tasting manager?
Yeah, I did. It was a whole lot of fun over there, and that's actually where I met John. He was kind enough to introduce me to my Nelson Sauvin.
The Schneider Nelson Sauvin beer, yeah.
Yeah, he was.
You know, it's funny, the Radagast right now, our good friends at Radagast, are actually featuring the Wiesen Edelweiss for the season, which is fantastic. Oh, but it's actually Schneider's Oktoberfest beer. Wiesen means meadow, which in Bavarian is sort of slang for Oktoberfest, and then Edelweiss means special Weiss, so it's the special Weiss beer for Oktoberfest.
All right.
But made with Cascade hops.
And Michael, so you guys are opening Bedvine Brew, and when and where will that open?
It's going to open in Bed-Stuy. It's going to open in the beginning of June. And we're doing a little bit new concept, basically. We're going to be a retail store, but it's going to be disguised as a tavern and a place for people to hang out. And so I came up with the concept because we opened up Bedvine Wine about a year and a half ago. And, you know, we met a lot of people in the neighborhood and talking to a bunch of people. You know, we kept hearing there's a big demand for, you know, a craft beer store in Bed-Stuy. You know, they get to go to the bodegas to get, you know, their Budweiser and Coors, but they don't want that. They want some stuff that's artisanal. And, you know, at Bedvine Wine, what we do is we focus in on providing experience and providing wines that you can't find anywhere. You know, it's an expression of the maker of the wine. And so now we're going to integrate that with craft brew. And it's going to be an interesting concept, and I can't wait for, you know, people to be able to see the place when we open up. And we got Brian. We brought Brian on board because Brian, you know, he knows the stuff about brew, and, you know, it's going to be a match made in heaven because he's going to, we're going to have a fantastic setup, lineup for of beer in that store.
All right. We're going to talk a little more with you guys, but just so you know, I know that our producer Bree is going to tweet some pictures of the construction going on there because I know it's going to be a very cool place. Right now we've got a call-in guest, so everybody be patient because sometimes it's a little bit of delay on the air. But Blue Jacket Brewing there in D.C., I got to try some of their collaborations when I was down in D.C. for the Craft Brewers Conference. Hi, is it Greg and Megan, are you on the air?
Yep, I'm here.
All right. So tell us a little bit about what you guys have coming in the works. I got to try some of your collaborations when I was at Church Key in D.C. recently. So tell us the plans, because you're building your brewery still, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. So Blue Jacket is something that's grown out of Church Key and Birch and Barley in Washington, D.C., and it's a project that we've been working on really going back to 2006, and we found a great space right by National Stadium. It's going to be this beautiful brewery, restaurant, and bar right in the heart of D.C., really concentrating on a lot of rotation of our beers. You know, we're kind of trying to bring a kind of rotating beer bar experience to a place where we're brewing our own stuff.
All right. And I had a couple collaborations of yours. So before you actually are open, you've been collaborating, right? That's obvious.
Yeah, that's kind of been our model, you know, our model for, which is a pretty unique way to go about opening. I mean, we have had a lot of, lucky to have a lot of, you know, attention to our whole project, you know, because of, you know, especially the program that Greg has built at Church Key over the past 4 years. There's been a lot of interest around the brewery that, you know, that he envisioned from the start. So instead of just letting this all be a whole lot of, you know, hype about what we're going to be doing, we've been backing it up with having us go out, work with, you know, some of our, you know, best friends and colleagues in the industry to keep, you know, releasing beers, you know, as collaboration projects with our, you know, our friends and partners in the industry. So there keeps, you know, we're giving the public something to look forward to, not just you know, the promise of, hey, there's going to be great beer, but so here it is.
So tell us a couple of the breweries that you've collaborated with.
Well, I think, Jimmy, you would have probably tasted the Fiscal Cliff IPA that we brewed. That was a collaboration with Three Floyds, Revolution, and Half Acre out of Chicago. It was just a kind of a classic American IPA. And then more recently, we did a beer with Jeff O'Neill at Peekskill, and Jason Perkins came down from Allegash. We did a beer called Share the Rainbow, which is fantastic. We were able to utilize Jeff's cool ship at Peekskill because we're going to have a cool ship at Blue Jacket as well. So that's the other thing that's been great about collaborations, is it's offered an opportunity for Megan to really kind of get her hands dirty and do a lot of, you know, kind of research and evaluate things that we're going to want to do later on.
So tell us a little bit about your cool ship and barrel aging program that you'll have at Blue Jacket.
Well, the cool ship is actually going to be situated in the one area of the building that actually has louvered windows. So just the way the whole building's set up, everything else is enclosed, but there is one space where we can actually, you know, bring in, you know, the fresh air and the, you know, the bacteria and wild yeast that are going to be, you know, going to be naturally around us, and, you know, inoculate the cool ship from there. In that same space, or at least adjoining it, is where we're going to have one of our barrel areas. And since, you know, the cool ship can definitely bring in, you know, the bacteria, that's where we're going to keep our wild barrel area. So that's all sort of segregated to, you know, to one area. On the other side of the second floor, separate from that, is where we're going to have a non-wild set of barrels. I think at this count, Greg, if I think I'm correct, that we're looking at 66 barrels between the two spaces.
Yeah, that's our on-site barrel storage capability when we start. Yeah.
You know, Greg, just so you know, when you're on the air, it sounds like you're calling from NASA. You got this. And I get, there's some cool guys here. Since you guys are, we have a special show tonight. We got Paolo. He's the brewer from Baladine in Italy. And we got Rob. He's the brewer from Thornbridge in England. Megan, do you want to ask them any questions?
Oh, gosh. I wouldn't even know where to start at the moment. I didn't know I'd even have an opportunity. It's great to meet you guys over the phone, at least tonight. Very lovely. But, oh, my gosh.
The next time you're in D.C., definitely look us up, and we can try to put something together, definitely.
So one thing I noticed when I was in D.C., so the laws are different, right? So at Church Key, you guys can get any licensed American brewery because you're in the federal district, right? You don't need to have a special state
laws. That's a great question, and it is something that is really interesting. So what Washington, D.C. has is a direct import law. So what I can do at Church Key is I can bring in beer from all over the world, all over the country, and I don't necessarily have to go through a distributor, which also means that the franchise laws are very lax. So it's not as if I wanted to, you know, for instance, like when we go out to Chicago and brew our collaboration beer, we brought that directly into Church Key along with a host of beers from the other breweries, which is really, really awesome. It's funny, though, because, you know, and Jimmy, as a publican yourself, I talk to a lot of people in the beer bar industry, and they're always like, they always act like they're really jealous, like, this would be so awesome if I could just bring in beers from all over the place. But the fact of the matter is that a lot of the breweries that we can't get aren't here because they don't have the beer to send us. And, you know, with shipping and freight, beer is not that much cheaper directly brought to the bar than it is to get it through the distributor, unless you're buying it, you know, in bulk package and things like that.
Yeah. Well, it's still neat, though. When you go to, you know, you go to Church Key, you're going to see all these different breweries that we don't get to see in New York.
That's for sure. Yeah, that is. That's cool. Yeah.
All right. Well, Paolo, I want you guys to meet him sometime. Do you ever go to D.C., Paolo?
What? D.C.?
Do you know D.C.? You've been to D.C.? I love you, man. We've got, Paolo is this guy from a little town in Italy that he's making beer at Baladine in New York and Rome.
D.C. is the District of Columbia.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
But have you been to D.C.?
No, never.
You got to go. Wouldn't you guys like to have Baladine?
We have to get you down. It's a wonderful market for Baladine. We sell a lot of your beer down there. There are really some very, very fantastic accounts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then Rob at Thornbridge, have you been to D.C.?
No, not at all. No.
Not yet. No. So you got.
Yeah,
Megan.
We actually have Coalition on cask right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, great. That was a beer I was really, really happy with.
So, Rob, what's the Coalition?
The Coalition is a beer that it was a collaboration with Terrapin, and it's an Imperial Rye ESB. yeah. I don't think it's a category that actually exists, but it works. There's a lot of rye there. And one thing that we're really keen on at Thornbridge is we propagate a new yeast. We've got a propagation system, and we've generally got a new yeast going every week. We did the Fuller's ESB yeast, which is something I'm really keen on, because we're using American yeast for a lot of our bottle and keg, which is a really neutral blank slate, which allows the hops to really show, you know, to do what they do well. And then for our cask beers, we use an English strain, and the English strains are where it, in a lot of ways, it's where it's at, I think. We use the Fuller's ESB strain for that beer, and we dry hopped with Citra as well. So I was just absolutely blown away with that beer. It was great in cask and in keg. Yeah.
Well, you guys, hopefully you guys can get Paolo from Baladine down there to collaborate with you. Are you going to do any collaborations at the brewery, yep. Megan?
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's been part of our, you know, part of the plan from the start is, in addition to, you know, doing this as part of our opening, the lead up to the opening, you know, which has been great for me to be able to stay, you know, active in breweries and not just sort of, you know, languish between having been in a brewery for a while and then going through the construction process. We want to make, you know, Blue Jacket be a destination and have it be the kind of place where, you know, where people, we're doing, you know, we're making, you know, such, you know, interesting and outstanding and delicious beers that people want to come, not just to drink, not just to eat, but to come and, you know, and work with us and, you know, and take advantage of the flexibility and freedom that we have with the system that we're putting in.
And that's a great point that Megan makes. I mean, this is actually a brewery, restaurant and bar, but it's also a production facility. I mean, we can do 5,000 barrels at this brewery. So we're going to be, you know, selling a lot of our beer on site. We're going to have 15 of our own beers on at all times, but we're also going to be doing some mild distribution. And one of the cool things about the tank space that we have 19 unique fermentation vessels that we're starting with, is that we can let the beers condition as long as they need to condition. We can always have the ability for rotation and trying out new things, but we'd like to think that if somebody just shows up in D.C. one day and wanted to do a beer, we could probably find space to do it. I mean, we've already got a couple breweries coming up. Ann Katrine from DeLewin's is going to be coming in. We're going to be doing a beer with her in June. Urbane Coteau from Strusa at the end of June. And then I think we're going to do one with Sebastian Sala from Freigeist as well in early July. So we're going to keep going with the collaboration for sure.
Greg, that's awesome. Listen, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to get you guys up to New York sometime, and we'll have you on the show. And sometime soon we'll be down to D.C. So when is
Blue Jacket? Bring some beer with us.
When's Blue Jacket opening, Greg? When is Blue Jacket opening?
Oh, I'm sorry. Blue Jacket should be opening July or August of this summer, coming up.
We're coming down, all right? Okay, thanks so much. Okay.
All right, we'll see
you
there.
So here we are. We've got this all-star crew here today. We got Bob Ledine. We got Bedvine Brew. We got Dansk Mead and a Thornbridge and Be United. So, hey, we'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
You're listening to 3 months, 3 years by The Hollows on heritageradionetwork.org.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Lord, I'm sure I'll turn blue. But the wind makes a choice and imitates the sweetest voice. Breaks your heart in two. Oh, darlings, we love her. Your lips are parched. Please do not quench them with your tears.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're at Roberta's in Brooklyn, and it's the Heritage Radio Network. It's the month to become a member. Go to heritageradionetwork.org. I'm a member. I'm member number 501, which I think it means I'm the number one member. You can figure that one out, but it's a great, great thing to be part of. And there's a dinner coming up May 19th, the Hawaiian Barbecue. It's going to be here at Roberta's. You're going to get a lot of special. I bet Michael Brooks from Bedvine Brew, I bet you're going to be a Heritage Radio Network member soon, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, man, you got to do it. You can do it as a business and as an individual. So, all right, and thanks for our sponsor, greatbrewers.com. It's all about the beer. Check out the Beer Cloud. I haven't checked that out in a couple of days, but whenever you want to find out where you can get your beers, like when Bedvine Brew opens up, you can be able to say, hey, what beers are going on? I don't know. Do you guys check out the Beer Cloud on the greatbrewers.com app?
I've checked it out once, and I checked it out, I think it was a couple of months ago. Love to get back into checking it out. Don't really know much about it.
Yeah, I think it's something that can help you guys as a retailer. So, all right, so Baladine, everybody. So what are you going to do when you open Bedvine Brew, Brian? You're going to work with some of these specialty brands? What kind of list are you going to have?
Well, of course. The idea of the list is to bring in things that are still affordable to a newly gentrifying neighborhood such as Bed-Stuy, and to give people an opportunity to drink things that aren't the Miller High Life or the Coors Light of the realm that happens to pop up in every single deli. Every so often, the way that Bed-Stuy has been working in the last 2 years, I would have to go hunt. I would go to one deli, walk right out with nothing. Go to another deli, walk right out with nothing. And every so often, when a good beer did come through, you'd try to beeline and always go to that deli, and it was just a hit or miss. It was never fully in stock all the time. And I was getting really frustrated. I said, man, this neighborhood really needs a proper beer store, retail. And then I got the opportunity when I started talking to Michael. I met him over at Saragina Restaurant. And he said, you know, man, we're really thinking about opening up this nice craft beer store. I think it's a perfect neighborhood for it. And, well, looking around, the closest beer store that I could even think of was all the way over in Park Slope. So that worked perfect. The cool thing about this concept is that it takes away the retail aspect. Even though it's there and people can still walk in, buy a growler and leave, the feel of the place, using reclaimed wood from upstate, doing it strategically, getting kind of like art installations as the walls because the wood is so beautiful and old, it's going to feel like a cozy gentleman's lounge.
So who was in charge of the design?
Well, basically, I'm the guy in charge of the whole concept, but I use three different designers for each different phase of it. And right now, I must say, it is working out really nice. And when we do open, people are going to be very, very surprised about what we're going to open up and what product we're going to deliver. Because I think that, you know, being in that neighborhood, people aren't used to, you know, seeing things that exceed expectations. And I really, really, truly believe that we will be able to exceed expectations at Bedvine Brew.
Okay, so let's talk about the beers from Bee United. There's some real esoteric stuff, Zymator series, some real specialty things. You got the Danksmude, the mead from Denmark. Which of these products would you say you're putting your first list together when you open up Bedvine?
Yep.
Which of the beers here today would you put on the list?
Well, I was instantly sold simply by the aroma of your Kipling there from Thornbridge. That was very impressive. I was actually reminded of almost the sourness of a lactic acid bacteria in there when I first smelled it. And when I tasted it, I said, wow, nothing like the smell. Aroma carried full through with a not as much of a bite, not as aggressive as you all said earlier in the show.
You know, one thing that's so amazing about the Kipling, I was saying this off air, is that the hops from New Zealand get so much terroir on them. That I get so much uric acid off those hops. It's almost like a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, that if I can say cat urine kind of aroma, sort of really intense.
Yeah, they say cat piss.
I didn't know if I could say that.
Which is not a
radio.
Bad thing.
No, it's just so speaks to where those hops come from. It's incredible
not
how
Michael
much it translates.
Michael Brooks, Bedvine Brew.
Hey. Love that
guy. So, and talk about Nelson. Paolo at Baladin, did you guys make a Nelson Sauvignon beer?
Yeah.
What did you name it?
Nelson.
That's so easy.
Yeah. We discovered the Nelson Sauvignon just because we were thinking something new, some new hops. And once we get on the internet, in New Zealand, someone is growing hops. I see. Oh.
Okay, so Paolo, so these guys are opening a new beer shop. Pick two of your beers, your like most popular and your favorite from Baladin that they should carry.
Absolutely Nora and Super Baladin.
Baladin, Nora, Baladin, Super. And Michael from Danksmude.
Actually, if I could jump in real quick. Part of the issue, the laws are different in every state in the United States. In New York City, beer stores can't carry mead. Mead in New York State is classified as a wine product. So we may have to put this in your wine outlet as opposed to your beer outlet.
Well, actually, we have a tavern license, so we could put it in the Bedvine Brew, but we just would have to pour it by the glass.
Yeah, so
it's totally acceptable.
With a tavern license, it's wow, interesting. But tell us, what would you like to see in their stores, Michael?
Well, I would like to see the Viking Blood to begin with, because it would be very nice just to give an idea of what mead actually is. But then I would definitely consider another mead called Old Danish Mead that has a touch of ginger to it, so it will work very well with a light seasonal pilsner for the blend.
One issue I have with some meads that I've tasted in America is they blend in fruit juice. And nope. Do you do that?
No.
Seems like a cheap version of it.
Yeah, but not at all. In order to make a good mead, I would use around half a kilo of honey for making 1 liter of mead. And I don't use anything artificial. And in fact, we're trying to set up, or is already doing so, in Kenya, an apiary. And in order to get honey that's of the highest quality. And hopefully we'll come to a point where we can do it entirely organic, because that would be something that we would be very much into.
Yeah, Michael, you just were telling me about this at the Nepenthe the other day. I had no idea that you were setting up a company in Kenya to harvest honey. That's really quite an undertaking.
Yeah, well, the thing is, we expect that it will take about 4 or 5 years. But for us, everything is a long term process. So we are not into making making a lot of meat in a short period of time, because the meats we make would generally be in storage for around 1 year before we would bottle it. And the experience we have gained over the last less than 60 years is that whenever you try to increase your production, the only, well, perhaps your bank account will be bigger, but you can be quite sure that the quality in general will go down. And if it's beer or if it's salami or whatever, generally, if you want to put in more machinery and you want to do more of that, the quality would suffer. And we are not interested in doing that. So that's the one-man operation idea.
You know, as far as the supply and production, where are you getting most of your honey now?
Well, the thing is that I could actually do a light smoky meat if I wanted to, just by using a particular honey. So for different meats, I would use different types of honey, because it would depend. If you are picking the honey from a forest, it will have particular flavors. If you're picking it from a coastal area where you would have a lot of fog drifting in with a lot of salt, that will affect the honey as well. So all these factors makes into we end up blending actually the meat or the honey in order to get the right honey. But as you probably know, at the moment beekeepers all over the world are struggling with a lot of problems with pesticides. And bees are dying for no apparent reason. So,
Brian?
One thing I would like to comment on, based on what he just said, there seems to be a market shift in all markets over to quality now. There seems to be people who are thoroughly paying attention not to their bank accounts. Sure, that in the end, that's going to happen. But if you stick to a principle of quality, then you're going to deliver a product that you feel good and you can rest easy at the end of the night delivering. I was introduced to that with Bar Hill Honey up in the Northeast Kingdom in Vermont. The same idea with them. They was a humble beekeeper, 48 years of beekeeping. He delivers raw honey, unpasteurized, no pesticides. It's all a biodynamic farm, and the difference is just outstanding.
We know them, Todd Hardy, and they also make great spirits too, Catalonian spirits. So we're going to get to that. And Rob from Thornbridge, what favorite beer and what just like standard beer from Thornbridge would you recommend for Bedvine's first beer list?
Well, Jaipur's our hero brand, and I think you guys, that's a beer that's readily available. And so Jaipur, and then I'd say Kipling, which we've been tasting today. Yeah, that's the beer.
And anything else like super special coming down the road that we might be able to get in New York?
I don't know if I can say this, but we've been working on some sour beers as well. And I think they've been in wood for the last 2 years, and we're going to bottle them in the next few weeks. And I think Bee United are going to take them from us, well, at least half of it. So that's our big project.
Brian, no, we'll take all of it, every last ounce.
Brian, in terms of trends, things that you really think you're going to move a lot of, or your favorite styles of beer right now, what do you like?
Oh, favorite styles of beer right now. I was impressed with any commitment to quality that any brewmaster has come out with. And the most advertised commitment to quality program that came out most recently was the Pilsner Urquell commitment to quality, where they got everything delivered as fresh as possible so that it tasted the same in the Czech Republic as it did over here in America. And I want to follow that same trend. I want to have the way that I see this list going is, sure, you're going to have your session beers. You're going to have, with 10 taps with growlers going, have some cheap quality session beers, and then have a few taps that really represent, for instance, the sour that you guys were referring to, something like that, something that people can really pour straight off the tap, enjoy fresh, and really have a quality beer to go with. I'd also like to rotate in rare bottles. That to me is a very interesting concept that I don't see many beer stores doing, where it's a constant random rotation based on the emails that we get from Be United right as these things are coming in. Guess what? We just got off the ship. It would be really cool to stock beers such as those as well. Can you tell us a little bit about those beers, John?
Oh, I mean, which one? Yeah. I guarantee you if it's rare, we'll get it for
you. Just so you know, these guys mostly pre-sell. So I get emails 2 months out, and they tell me what's coming in, and I say yes. And then 2 months later, it shows up.
And that's why we love you, Jim.
That's the only way to get their good beers. But lastly, I want to talk to Paolo because he's got this great accent. It's from a small town of 800 people and chickens. But where is Baladin? It's in Italy, but what town is it in?
The Baladin is in Piozzo. That is a small, small village in northwest of Italy, 80 kilometers in the south of Torino. And we are in the near the vineyards. So from Barolo, where it produced the wine, we are 10 minutes. So from the brewery, you can see all the vineyards.
I know about Torino. When Italy was first independent after Garibaldi, Torino was the capital, right?
Bravo.
Yes. So tell us more about beer. Last thing, one of our favorite beers that everyone knows, the Baladin Noel, comes out at Christmas. You know, tell us about that beer, how you made that beer.
Okay, what is my favorite beer in the world? I don't know. What is my favorite beer in Baladin? Depends. If I woke up and I put down the left feet or the right feet down the bed, if they say in the evening I had chicken or beef, depending. All the day changes.
Okay, that's a good answer. Well, I think that's the last thing we're going to have anybody say today, because we've got like four different countries in the room, and some guys from Bedvine Brew opening up soon, and Be United. So, guys, thanks so much. We'll let you know it's National Homebrew Day. If you're not a homebrewer, go find someone who is and drink their beer. All right. And American Craft Beer Week is coming up, too, May 13th to 19th. Go to craftbeer.com, and we're trying to push Savor. Savor is coming to New York. That's a special event that had been in D.C., and now it's in New York, and we're going to have a few special things going on, including June 11th. We're going to have the premiere of Beer Hunter movie, which is a movie about Michael Jackson, and a number of Long Island breweries will be doing things in New York City to welcome Savor to New York. So you can learn more about all these things on goodbrewseal.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. And if you like this podcast, give us a good review on iTunes. All right, thanks to Simon and Rob, Paolo, Michael, Brian, Megan and Greg, and John Lumbaum for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor, and our engineer, Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.